Right back up.
We're excited.
All right, we'll start with the planning commission for initial questions and thoughts. He's no therapist.
Commissioner Fowle will be here shortly.
Anyone from the planning commission?
Yeah.
Danielle?
Is it Jared?
What is the consequences of a community that doesn't follow the general plan? And if we implement the plan and it isn't followed, what are the consequences to not follow?
Come on up.
For a community, city or county that doesn't follow the general plan, just opens them up to litigation by somebody who wants them to follow the general plan. However, if nobody is willing to step forward and say, we want to force you to do what you said you were doing in the plan, then there are no consequences. So it's just exposure to litigation, potential litigation, is the theory. And it just really depends on whether or not there are issues here. But way back in the early days of general plan updates, there were folks going around suing cities and counties, forcing them to comply with state law. And I haven't seen that happen for decades. So it's what we do see now is with all the changes in the housing element law and all of the new requirements for housing elements, some cities are, mostly cities, I don't know about counties, but mostly cities are resisting doing everything that the state is telling them they have to do. And Attorney General has been suing some cities. So Huntington, I think Huntington Beach is being sued. So in that case, it's the state that's suing for compliance on the housing law because the housing issues are a big issue for the state. But in general, the state's not going to pay that much attention to the rest of your general plan. Maybe because of the importance of the safety elements and the changes in safety element law because of all of the recent wildfires that we've had here, the state may get more aggressive in enforcing that if they see non-compliance as a public safety issue. But just in general, it's exposure litigation, and if there's nobody that's going to litigate them, it is what it is. Does that answer your question?
Well, yes, because then you want to ask, what is the advantage of applying, accompanying the general plan? Is there any advantage to the community that enforces the general plan?
Well, to me, having been working on general plans for a lot of my career, the general plan isn't, the importance isn't to comply with state law. The importance is to use this as a vehicle for the county to make decisions about its future, whether it wants to preserve, whether it wants to change. And the general plan isn't meant as a tool for the county to better serve the community and make well-informed decisions for long-term growth and development. So
that sounds so good.
Well, I guess I'm a true believer in general plans.
I am too.
Most of my career.
I am too.
Let me start.
I've got dibs, Tony. I was first.
We'll go down the line. Mr. Fowle, can you please?
So, this is directed at either Brent or Ryan. Supervisor Ogren and I met with you all 2 months ago and gave some direction, and I'd like an update on what has transpired with the discussion that we had at the old hospital. With the input that we gave you. Well, Supervisor Ogren and I met with staff and Ryan and Jim and Brent, multiple on the view screen, and Nancy and I both gave input when you were asking for direction, and I would like kind of an update from that point to now, what has transpired out of that discussion.
Sure.
So just for others in the room, that discussion was part of a kickoff meeting that was done internally with county staff.
Since we're on Zoom, if you could give your name when you step up to the plate.
No problem.
Great, thank you.
First name's Brent, last name's Gibbons, project manager for the general plan update. So as part of that effort, we had an internal kickoff meeting with staff, talked about internal expectations from a staff perspective, and we had a board member and a commissioner there. As part of that update, allowable uses and part of the zoning code and streamlining was one of the bigger, I would say, topics of discussion and how the zoning code is folded into the overall effort. The discussion of the use of water, the discussion of marijuana use, the discussion of how that coincides with different compatible land uses was brought up. Now, there's no action taken on some of those pieces quite yet. We're not into the zoning code portion. We're not into the goals and policies portion. All of those notes were compiled, pulled together, and are being streamlined into an existing document. So that's the background report I had touched on earlier. That's going to set the setting in order to tee up and further those discussions that were originally brought up. There was also a discussion on engagement and how it's important that we try to do as much outreach as possible across the county, giving equal voice to everybody. Ryan had touched on a few metrics for that, and it was timely that there was a comment today about how the board meetings are in the morning. So part of that was having various locations, various times, mostly meeting people where they're at, not expecting people to come to us. So as part of the discussion, that was also a big effort to move forward as well. There was a discussion on the Scott Valley area plan and the importance it is to the county and how that gets worked in. How is that? There was a question earlier this morning, about how it wasn't coded. Coded means that it's a standalone plan. The plan itself isn't codified in development regulations or codified into your zoning code. So those were some of the other larger topics that were brought up. If there's anything that I missed, please let me know and I can address it.
Thank you. No, I wanted to make sure everybody was on the same page going into here because I didn't see a communication from y'all in between that meeting and this meeting to see overview. I'll let you know I wouldn't have to go. Communication is critical here. It's a two-way street.
Sure.
We can give you a lot of information, but if we don't get back from you what you thought you heard us say, we don't know for sure you understand what we meant.
And if the commission and board would like to expand upon the communication besides what we had previously talked about and open that door further, we can. I've been on projects where community comments that come in, Ryan had talked about on the website, you can submit a comment. Most people ask, where the heck does that comment go? Well, that comment goes right to my inbox. It goes to my inbox, it goes to Ryan's inbox, and it goes to county staff's inbox. One method of transparency and communication as part of that is actually publicizing all of those comments and all of those responses on the website constantly. So that everyone is aware and everyone can see what people are asking and filtering through. I think there are some options here to maybe not repeat what you're discussing about communication or lack thereof at the beginning of the project, is to maintain an open course of dialogue with both the commission and the board, whether that is a memorandum or summary that comes forward to you at meetings, either given by staff or by us. We can definitely work through that to make sure that the dialogue maintains.
Mr. Fowles, did I answer your question?
It is an answer.
Okay. Mr. Mill?
Yes, one of the problems, when I was on the city council in Mount Shasta, we started a general plan. Did it ever get done? I do not know. However, one of the frustrations was it was one size fits all. And that is one of the big things that were brought to our attention at that time. And I left the council and it had never, the general plan was never completed.
Okay.
While I was there.
Okay.
And this, I'm just sharing this because, you know, then you get into all the rhetoric. You know, a simple question, what time is it? Takes five paragraphs. That frustrates people. You know, get to the point. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a few questions. As far as the required elements,
yes.
Are there bullet points of like subheaders of what we have to discuss within each required element that you can provide to the commission and the board so that we know those topics that you have to address?
Yes, so typically within each element there are topics that are outlined. Some of those are required by the state. But there are a whole host of topics that are up for debate and what fits the mold of the county.
Okay.
But yes, we can provide generalized topics that you would typically find within a general plan, but I would say that those aren't set in stone, and those won't necessarily move forward here. It depends on each jurisdiction.
Okay. And then as far as those new state requirements,
mm-hmm.
again, is there a list of bullet points of code or regulation that you can direct us to so we can see what minimum thresholds we're required to address?
Yes.
Because...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we have a... It is a lengthy running list of all of the new legislation that comes out every year, how it pertains to the general plan, and we can provide that to the board and commission so you have an idea of what it is.
Yeah, certainly like that.
Sure.
And then as far as... There was a... Let me find my notes. I assume within this document that there's some definitions that I think are going to need clarification. Like, who defines... what's a healthy community?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if those are identifiable, I would like to see that. And as well as, like, the definition of community resiliency, safety in all policies, those are, I mean, community resiliency might mean something to me versus somebody else. I would like to see those definitions of terms.
And those definitions aren't crafted yet,
okay.
Because it's subjective. What community resiliency is in Siskiyou County is not the same what it is in LA. It's different. It depends on each community.
Okay.
And prioritizing health is different here than it is just 50 miles down the road.
Okay.
So, yes, the definitions portion, that'll be part of public review. That'll be part of commission's recommendations. It's a big wordsmithing exercise.
Yep.
So,
And that's really what I'm getting at is, you know, community resiliency is, that could be a big word.
It is. Yeah, it's not.
And then, as far as the project timeline, it was talking about, you know, the existing conditions and background reports. So one of my questions is, with your background research, so, you know, 60-something percent of our county is owned by the feds.
Mm-hmm.
How does that get incorporated with what they're doing in the safety plan element, especially with the wildfires?
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, we have a large percentage of... large timber ownerships.
Mm-hmm.
Are you planning on meeting with those large landowners to get what their plans are to incorporate it in the safety element?
In the safety element or in the other general plan elements?
Well, maybe all of them, but I'm thinking from the wildfire component.
So from the safety component, I'll have to defer to Haley since the safety element is being done in-house on that. I can say when it comes to the different data that's collected, what we're working through is with your staff, and the staff is... basically fielding us out to different stakeholders, organizations, regional, state, federal agencies to collect data from there. In regards to specific property owners and different plans that would affect the general plan and also need to be consistent with, that's where I would ask the board, if you know of specific stakeholders that we should be reaching out to, I'd welcome that. That's important.
Yeah.
There is a stakeholder component as part of this. It's done at the beginning of the project. And that's to try to basically step out of the more formal board chambers and have those one-on-one discussions with different stakeholders. But that list is not—it's not created as of yet. And as part of this, we would hope that we could get information from you or individuals that you think are important to talk to.
Okay. And then, as far
can I jump in on that real quick? Did you and I feed off of each other really well? If the chair will allow it,
it's not something
she
typically do.
So
Danielle wants to be interrupted. That's.
So, along the lines here on this baseline, and so, councils, this is direction to you, perhaps also to Jim. Find me a county general plan that was worded, or a legal way to word a general plan, that will hold federal and state-owned lands accountable to the county general plan. And it's exactly what Danielle's talking about. And when we're talking about data collection, what was the tree density? 50 years ago today, water storage capacity, fuel density, because the only way that our safety in the community and the communities are resilient is if we can hold state and federal accountable for lack of management.
It's a two-way street in that respect.
And that, yeah, and the sand density info can be found in what's called FIA data.
Okay.
Forest inventory assessment. Okay, and then will the planning and the board, planning commission and the board, will we have input along the way working with the planning department in the document before it's released to the public, or do we get that information as it's released to the public? Like, what's our involvement pre and post?
Sure. So typically before a document, so the steps work, I'll just break down it. There was, let's say, the background report. The background report goes through an internal internal draft, which is done between the consultant team, then goes as an admin draft to county staff and through departments, other departments who review it and make sure the technical data is up to snuff. There may be things that are not readily available information-wise that they can benefit and add in. Before a document goes full public, it typically goes out for review to commission or board. You'll find that's the way when it comes to vision guiding principles, the policy document. Each of the decision-making and recommending bodies can weigh in, and that's what ends up going out as a public review draft. The comment period on all of those documents does not end until the end of the project. The public comment period does not end. The document is not solidified. It does not. It can be changed up until the final moment. So that's just something to be aware of. A question I get a lot is, well, once it's out for public review, that you're saying the document's done. I've had general plans go down to the final meeting, and policies are changed right at the tail end, and things are shifted around. So it's not. Don't think that the process ends at a public review stage.
Well, that actually gets into my next question. Was with your time frame, how likely are we to stick to that time frame? Because this is a big document, and dealing with environmental planning myself, I've seen these things go on for years. Is there any?
Yes, they can. They can. I would say right now the way that this schedule is structured, I don't see it going beyond that schedule. This is a technical effort. It's narrowly focused on three elements in your zoning code. The zoning code does not fall after the plan. It's integrated all within, so it's all done at the same time. The one thing to be considered of is engagement time, lead time for noticing. We want to make sure that adequate lead time is provided for all of these meetings, so that sometimes can shift a schedule a bit, and finding time to get in front of both the Planning Commission and the board. Those are outside of our control, but we'll work with both the Planning Division and Administration to make sure that gets done in a timely way.
And then one last question, and maybe this is for the board or county council, but those workshops, are they going to be a Brown Act notice? Or I'm just wondering about commission and supervisor involvement.
Yeah.
I just want to double check. So, like, if it's Brown Act, then I can go.
It's pretty
good. Yeah, Lynn, do you want to address that?
The Brown Act usually applies to a legislative body, and so if it was just the planning department meeting with the community with their consultants, then generally that wouldn't be a Brown Act event. But to the extent that bodies are meeting and workshops are held for legislative bodies, the Brown Act would apply.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because I know sometimes I'm not... I want to make sure we're not in any violation if I attend something.
And I think having decision makers, both in the Planning Commission and the board, in compliance with the Brown Act, be in attendance at those meetings is very important. I mean, you're representing the districts within the county, and to be there and hear from constituency on how it's going to move forward and their expectations as decision makers is key.
Yep.
Supervisor Robert?
Yep, I am. Thank you.
Through
the chair. One of my frustrations was you have a plan. We had a wastewater treatment issue when I was on the city council. Mm-hmm. We got a cease and desist from the state. We went and got funding. Mm-hmm. We built this plant. 1 year later, they changed the amount of effluent that could go into the river, so we had to make an additional change to that. Mm-hmm. And frustrating, they keep changing things, mm-hmm. tightening the rope, mm-hmm. and we have to pay the price.
You're talking about the tightening of state regulations on our...
Exactly, and they change them. You know, that was our frustration. We spent a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Yes, most of it was grant money. However, mm-hmm. within 2 years, we had to redo it and make an additional thing to it so that we could put the effluent that was left, mm-hmm. in this case, was transferred to the golf course in Mount Shasta, mm-hmm. for irrigation.
No, and I can...
That's the thing that frustrates me about the environmental parts of these things.
And it is. Sometimes it is a moving target at times. And I can actually understand your frustration being on the consultant side and being the messenger explaining this. Legislation is constantly moving. There needs to be an understanding that through a process like this that is so big, that is touching on so many different topics, so many different elements, that within a 3-year time span, state law does change. But it's on not only our team in coordination with county staff to be able to progress those changes, and as those changes come through, that we make the modifications so that you don't have to if and when the plan's adopted at that point. So we try to get ahead of the game on those types of issues. I mean, similar to what you're dealing with the wastewater and the tightening down, ADU legislation has changed so many times. Most communities aren't even including ADU language in their code anymore. It just refers out to state law. It's easier rather than trying to change it every other year. So I do understand your frustrations when it comes to those types of things.
And one of my big frustrations is, okay, we're going to do this until 2000 or whatever, mm-hmm. and we get the final document. Mm-hmm. It's outdated already because mm-hmm. they're going to change it.
Not necessarily.
Hope you're right.
Not necessarily. What we typically do is we build into our...
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about state requirements.
Oh, no, I understand. Okay. It's not personal. No. It has to do with state legislation and the amount of changes that come out of Sacramento.
Exactly. Thank you.
As part of what we typically build into our general plan is what we like to call it. It's like a 5-year review. It's not done by a consultant team. It's done by county staff. And that is a 5-year review at that point to look back at the policies, look back at the changes in state law, just to see if any modifications need to change, or to make sure that the policies are meeting your expectations. It could be as simple as the word should and shall get changed. So I think that's really important, and that's typically a program that we as Minter Harnish like to build in, because you're right, the plan could change, and you know, this plan shouldn't be something that sits on a shelf and gathers dust. That's not the point. So the point is to make sure that it's a living document, it's constantly moving, and it constantly reflects where the county's headed. And so we purposely put in that so the board at a 5-year mark goes, okay, let's go back, let's take a look and evaluate this internally.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. With all due respect, let me go through, and I would like to come through the board and then come back around for a follow-up. So, Mr. Beal?
Okay. On the... it says the Siskiyou County General Plan,
yes.
2023 to 2050.
Yes.
So I assume the state of California is looking forward, because this is probably coming out of Sacramento, the element that you want to impose or suggest, correct? I mean, California is looking for future growth. Are they not? How to manage future growth?
California is looking to...
When they send you out.
Well, California doesn't send me out.
Okay.
So I just to make that clear, I'm not working for the state of California.
I know.
When it comes to I think when you're looking at the 2023 to 2050, the state of California doesn't say Siskiyou County, you have to look at 2050. That's not a requirement. What it is they do want you to set a baseline to look toward. Some of the plans, general plans, are 10 years.
Okay.
Some are 15, some are 20.
Let me just say that. If you go back 25 years, mm-hmm. The county's population was probably 44,000. Mm-hmm. Today it's 47,000. Mm-hmm. We're not really in a path of growth in this community, right?
Correct.
So if you were trying to say, because California is worried about Sacramento County and Los Angeles County and mm-hmm. Fresno County, what are we going to do with these people?
Sure.
And they try to implement, well, these conditions must be applied universally, mm-hmm. and they try to apply them in Siskiyou County, I think it's going to fail. It isn't.
Well, I mean, state law is across the board applied statewide, but it doesn't mean that the state law is going to have a dramatic growth effect here, because the way that growth has occurred here is not the same as growth has occurred in Glenn County down I-5. It is different. What we start to look at is when you're looking at growth, you look at statistic population, you look at statistic employment. You're not seeing a sharp curve here. It's a general curve. So when we're looking at how growth is anticipated, growth, that's why I mentioned in the beginning, growth might be so minimal, it's not much. And I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, California's lost population actually in the last 2 or 3 years.
California has lost population, and so, some counties themselves have lost population.
And Blair mentioned one big element or community, mm-hmm. is Shastina out here. Mm-hmm. It was the 1960s, and boy, the planes were coming in, and there's over 5,000 lots created in that community. There are more lots available for sale today in that community that are unbuilt, they're not built upon, than are built upon. So we're not really in a need for accommodating growth.
And that can and the need for accommodating growth or having this a growth-centric plan doesn't have to be in that. And that's the point I'm trying to make is that the plan reflects where the county wants to go. If the county is more of a no growth, maintain, preserve, the plan will go that direction. It doesn't have to go on a pro growth bent. I worked in a small community in Sonoma County that was preserve, maintain, small town character. The general plan was not a growth general plan.
But what happened?
It was a preservation general plan.
And what happened there?
What happened there? Adopted.
And where did the growth go?
The housing element outlines your regional housing needs allocation, so that's on a separate track. But they didn't see expansive outward growth as part of it. It just didn't.
So no, you didn't see outward growth?
I think we're starting to...
Okay, that's
it. Yeah, let's get do the kickoff. What we want is input and go from there. Mr. Yeah. Veal, or Hart, did you have a follow-up here?
Yeah. This is a CEQA effort. This whole effort right here is based on CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act law, period. In that law, stuff that comes to us, mm-hmm. there's a checklist of every environmental concern mm-hmm. that has to be addressed. You've got your required elements in the general plan with a couple of new things here. And I'm not sure how this is going to be tackled. One big environmental justice. Mm-hmm. You know, that can be interpreted subjectively 20 different ways. Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested in how you're going to, whatever you're going to come up with that is going to be adopted by mm-hmm. Board Supervisor. Because, and then there's some other elements here under new state requirements. Everything in this general plan is going to be predicated solely on water use. Period. There's an awful lot of dry dirt in this valley and that valley because of the water curtailments and the drought. Mm-hmm. State Water Board will come back in 10 days, probably with an emergency in-stream or flow requirement in the shafts and the Scott until they come up with something permanent, a permanent flow. Mm-hmm. There are going to be some people who are going to lose their water rights. Mm-hmm. That property is not going to just sit there and be dry dirt because it's still having to pay tax to the county. It's under Williamson Act. The county has been going through a pretty good effort through the planning department doing an accounting of what is under Williamson Act. And is it still being used as ag land because of what's going on with all the cannabis growth? If it doesn't have agricultural activity, that means then that it loses that Williamson Act. All of a sudden, their property tax, i.e. say it's $20,000 this year, mm-hmm. it's now going to be $100,000 next year. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with that piece of property that's going to be able to pay that tax bill to the county? The county's got a $185 million budget, $130 million of it goes to social services. It doesn't produce anything. You've got a county land base 70% of it's owned by a government entity that doesn't pay a dime of tax into the tax base for the county to use. So in the development of this plan, there has to be flexibility, because a lot of this ground is going to change, and it's probably going to happen in the next 2 to 5 years, because on top of flow requirements are going to come TMDLs, which is total maximum daily load of pollutants. And the Shouts and the Scott, those were under a court order. They were set 15 years ago. The ag communities in both valleys haven't done anything to address them. They've been given another 2 years to come up with how they're going to address it. Then each individual landowner is going to be required to acquire a discharge permit of water going off of their property. If it's going into a stream and it doesn't meet a certain quality, they're going to get handed a cease and desist order and be liable for litigation from third party. We've already had some of that happen here. And I guess what I'm trying to get at here in your development of this plan is to try and armor plate it as best you can, because whatever we can come up with, it's going to get challenged in court, no doubt in my mind. There are groups in this county that will challenge it, probably from both sides of the spectrum, because there are those that don't want any kind of a plan, and then there are those that want a plan with restrictions everywhere what you can do. But again, it all comes back to water use and taxation of what you're going to do with that plan. Mr. Stapleton talked about the Scott Valley Area Plan that was put in place in 1978. It was put in place because of the rampant development out there in the Shasta Valley. It started in the early 60s. Started in Mount Shasta Vista Subdivision. Well, that property was used for winter graze, for cattle and sheep. The owner of the property had no children to leave it to. Sold it to a developer, and here we are 60 years later, and nobody would have ever dreamed that we had that. That went in with no county general plan. No building codes, no road plate standards. One well that serviced in 6 sections. Each section got divided into 1 acre lots. The county condemned the well because it wasn't potable water. And so we have that. Next came Shastina, which Mr. Beal talked about. Developers from LA came in and bought it from an irrigation district. All of a sudden they became solvent. They were always broke. Then came Big Springs Ranches. Again, no county general plan. So from Hart Road all the way to the top of the divide at Hammond Ranch, on both sides of the freeway, all the way out, you've got all that development because that ag land became uneconomically viable. So after flexibility in this plan, you're going to see a lot more of that go on. And yeah, Dusty's right, there's an awful lot of lots out there for sale. But these landowners are going to come into the planning department going, you know, I can't make a living. I can't pay the tax to the county. The county's not going to take the property out of foreclosure. They've already got enough of that they could do that with right now, but nobody's going to touch it. Something's going to happen with that land use, and I don't know what that is. I really don't. The Scott Valley Area Plan, the people put that in to stop development and put it in the right place. You take that water off the ag land, all of a sudden that now changes the zoning because of the soil type of the water. So I'm waving my arms going, how do we protect agriculture and keep it in place? Because everybody in agriculture is going to have to produce more with less just to stay even, let alone pay the tax bill to the county, because they are the biggest taxpayer in this county. They and Tim.
And that's where I think that this general plan process is crucial. You outlined some points about how development was rampant. It had no checks, no balances, no accountability. It was almost, sounds like, a free-for-all in some respects.
Well,
and the general plan outlines the criteria that you as the planning commission make a recommendation to the board based on community feedback about what are those, what are the metrics or criteria for development here? How does it work? How do you preserve ag? How do you maintain it? How do you work with local, state, and federal agencies through protection and not losing that land? So all of that can be built into this plan, and that's the direction the plan can go. But at this point, I don't have answers to them. I really appreciate the feedback, because that's feedback that we take in and that guides through the process. But at this point, we don't have a response to that yet, because we're plan's just starting. If I had all the answers, I don't know why I'd be here. So
water quality and water quantity is going to drive this document. Because it's either it's for agriculture, or human, or for environmental uses. Those three. And they're competing, and there's only a finite amount of it there.
Right.
And right now, agriculture's at the bottom of the heap to get any part of it.
Well, and I think that there are ways within the general plan elements themselves to bolster those topics and bring them to the forefront, as it happens to be conservation, open space, water use, services, utilities, ag preservation, how all of that works. There's also ways to elevate it within the plan itself. So there are a lot of options. There is flexibility within it in order to make that the resounding feature of a plan like this.
Because ultimately, this is going to fall on the board supervisors to have a plan flexible enough to deal with these changes that are coming. We've got an ag community. You know, stick your head in the sand, and we're not going to deal with this. And all of a sudden, here comes a runaway freight train at you, and it's going to be here in a year. And they're not ready to deal with it yet. A lot of us have jumped in the middle of this, started long ago, and they're not going to come bother us. But the people who haven't done anything, all of a sudden, it's going to be knocking on their door. And then what are going to be their options? Through the planning department, because even if they do come, since we don't have a plan, and I'm just looking at my tenure on the planning commission, whenever we have a project come from South County, guaranteed litigation. I mean, it just, that's the way it happens. Because you have a community down there that understands the law, they know what you can and can't do. How do we put this plan together so that, and maybe we can't, that minimizes the litigation so that people can get on with their lives and get things done in an appropriate fashion instead of the county spending so much money with outside law firms trying to defend a project, get the project approved, and then the project proponent ends up walking away. But yet the county's left holding the bag, spending the money in court.
I think there'll be different methods to start to tackle the problem you're talking about. And I think what we can start to do is work that in to, that's mainly going to come between the piece of the zoning code revisions and that's kind of between the piece of the policy document itself, is where those methods and different options and flexibility come in. And those will get run by both the Planning Commission and the board before they make it out for there'll be a public meeting, but before it's a public technical public review document. So there are ways. Everything I'm hearing, I wouldn't say is a can't. All of those types of concepts, ideas, making sure that what comes down the pipe, and it sounds like that there are going to be a lot of, I would say, important facets of this project that are aligning with some of the pieces you're talking about that are ironic but are coinciding at the right time in order to have those. Conversation as part of this holistic effort.
Right, because what comes to the planning commission out of the planning department is guided by CEQA law. So when we make our decisions, it's based on that environmental checklist, based on the Subdivision Map Act, and we're following law, period. We're not making a political decision. That's not our job. That's those folks. So as long as we have done our job correctly, and that's what I'm trying to get the update in this plan, to more specificity, so you take away the subjective call on something.
Yeah.
Like you look at the environmental checklist, you've got high, medium, and low on every goddamn thing that you can think of. And when it first gets started, the planning department, they're going to make a subjective call, what are the issues here? And then they go hire the consultants, the project proponent pays for it, but then he's completely removed to it. But then it comes to us to go, okay, this is the science that's presented under the law that we have to deal with, so that we take the subjectivity out of it.
Well, I think that's a key component of where more modern general plans are starting to go. Lose the gray area, use the subjective language, lose the confusion.
Right.
Objectivity is key, so when a project does come forward, there is no, it's going to kill the words, but subjectiveness by staff when trying to make a determination about whether a project's approved, denied, whether it meets the environmental considerations. Should be black and white whether it does or not through an evaluation of metrics. So, and the general plan policies will move in that direction as well. And as part of the code update too, that has to be objective. You can't have gray area in the code. Otherwise, it's not a code.
Okay, with all due respect, we'll go to the supervisors now. Supervisor Rubin?
Oh, is it?
We'll come back around. Come back around.
Thank you for inviting me.
I really appreciate all your comments. You're very, very thoughtful, and I appreciate all the work you do and your objectivity. Geography, demographics, hydrology, socioeconomic variation are all critical things that we have to deal with in our county. They vary everywhere, from the top of this county to the bottom, and both sides. Homelessness, low income, multifamily housing are issues throughout the county, and not only in the cities, but in our outside the city area, so in the unincorporated areas as well, because everything bleeds out. Infrastructure is an issue that we have to deal with in the unincorporated areas as well as the city, so that's something that we have to look at in these elements. Forest land, public and private. The Williamson Act is huge. We deal with that at every single meeting that we have. These are all issues that have to come up, and we have to talk about them at length. And the public has got to help us with this. If every single meeting that we are going to have, public outreach, and we talked about that at length in that first meeting. Mr. Fallon and I, you know, really focused on this kind of stuff. So without the public input that we are begging for, we can't make this happen to the best advantage. So we need the public to help make this work the best way possible. These are all issues that we have to spend a lot of time talking about. And Mr. Hart, I really appreciate your comments. We have spent, you know, countless hours talking about water, agriculture, fish, all these things. We were just in Sacramento dealing with the hearings. That was an endless day. And hopefully, you know, it helped. These things are not going to go away. And hopefully, you know, we can move forward in a direction with this plan that will help, you know, come out with a better situation for everybody. I can't tell you how many hours, days, nights, you know, we sit around and talk about this stuff, think about it, work toward a better solution. But it takes all of us to do that. And hopefully you'll hear everybody and be able to help us move toward a better future in 2050. We can't predict exactly what the weather's going to do. We can't predict how these things are going to go or who the players are going to be in 2050. We may not be here. I know I won't be right here. At least I hope not.
Blair will be
But we can only work together to try to make it a better plan. And it is just a plan. It's a guideline. It's a suggestion. Sheriff's not here, just like stop signs. But we can hope to make it a useful tool for us to work toward. And I'll stop there because everybody else has a lot of comments. Thank you.
We're on track to be here till 5.
Yeah.
Supervisor Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah, we were down in Sacramento testifying on the water curtailment stuff. That was a late night. I appreciated the phone calls that I received on this and some texts and emails and stuff. I was able to explain to people what we were doing here. I know there was a lot of concern. We were going to vote. I had really good people call. I had some good people call. They thought we might be reducing from 65 counties to 24 counties today. They were worried that we were voting on that, which we were not voting on or anything. So thank you for the background here, but I want to thank everyone that texted me or called me ahead of time that asked what was going on, so I was able to explain what we were doing here today. Are we currently under a general plan right now?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, that's my, I'm just opening the question here. So currently we're under a general plan, so this isn't the state saying, here's a plan for us, and we have to do this. This is a county general plan that the county adopts that we do through our local governance, which is really the role of government, local government, is local feedback from the constituents, from citizens, as well as setting direction, goals, plans, objectives that we need to go after for the future to make us, you know, even better than what we are. When was our last general plan adopted?
1980.
Okay.
September.
I was wondering if it was Norma Fryer Lee McCordle, but the last supervisor that did this would have been several supervisors ago for me for District 1. Would have been Leo McCardle from McLeod would have been the county supervisor. So I think they're probably amazed that the plan was lasting this long. So we are under a general plan. This is not the state imposing anything on us. I understand that you do work for both Republican and Democrat counties. It's a nonpartisan role in which you play. All right. Some of the things I want to talk about is the cities. How are we going to coordinate with the cities? Yes, I'll say Tula Lake, Doris, Montague, Edna. Is it through their city council? So I know some cities are probably like us. The general plan is not as up to date as even as ours is. So how does that role work with the cities?
Yeah. So when you coordinate with cities, typically it starts with the city's planning staff in coordination on what the cities are planning, because the cities each have their own sphere, which goes into the county. So again, two-way street. Doesn't necessarily always make it up to a council within a city, but as part of the cities are seen as stakeholders through this process. Cities comment on documents when they come out, because where the county heads, cities are affected, just like when the city does their general plan, they're affected as the county.
All right. I know for some cities, the just outside the city limits is actually where a lot of the industry is, where it is in county area, but those are the jobs and the school kids for those areas. And for a lot of the cities that we have, their staff is minimal at best, so they don't have a planning department. It's actually probably all within one building, within a couple offices, their whole staff. So you're gonna be coordinating with them. I'll take it the city managers. Those sorts of folks?
Yeah, so in this instance, when it comes to coordination with cities, we rely on local staff to make that connection, and then it's coordination with their county staff. So it's just not myself reaching out.
Gotcha. Right. We also have Assembly Bill 52. I don't know when it was passed, but there are tribes that the counties recognize we have to coordinate with on issues. Two tribes that may be overlooked that we should consider. We have an AB 52 with the Shasta tribe and also with the Modoc tribe.
Okay.
So those are two tribes. There's others, but those are two tribes we want to continue. And it's really because we should. It's also because we have to. We've recognized them through their maps and their jurisdiction, their areas, territorial sovereignty.
Can I ask a follow-up question to that?
Yes.
Through CEQA and review of documents, there is tribal consultation that is a requirement by the state. The two tribes that you're mentioning, are you seeking for those two tribes to be included as a stakeholder through the process?
whatever
outside
would get into the plan.
Outside of traditional tribal consultation.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think so.
Just one clarification. So we're aware when we're starting to build that list that we accurately reflect who the board would like.
We have the Kruth tribe as well. I just want to make sure those two tribes were not left out.
Okay.
The Modocs, long story short, they were shipped on cattle cars to Oklahoma to die, and they survived. And so now they're coming back, and then the Shastas aren't federally recognized, but naturally are in this area. We also have community service districts. So I refer to Tennant as well as McLeod as city counties. Our county cities,
mm-hmm.
Your coordination with the community service districts down there, because we do the internal things there. I mean, community service districts do fire, water, sewer, but then we do vacation rentals, inns, all those sorts of things. So it's very important that you have the coordination there, because it's really a city, or it's maybe micromanaged a little bit by the county, mm-hmm. and we must have the feedback from those areas.
Yes, and we're already coordinating with county staff on reaching out to all CSDs. In order, that's part of the first step of the background report.
And the next part, it'll identify the safety needs of areas. So I've seen a lot of reports, you know, it'll identify potential fire hazard, potential flood area. Does your entity also pursue the grants or the funding sources for it, or identify who we can capitalize upon for those sorts of things?
So typically, anything that deals with public safety and natural or man-made hazards is found within the safety element.
Yes.
The safety element is not being updated by our team as part of this effort. I might have to rely on county staff to answer that question, but they can get into the specifics about what that element's going to cover that they're preparing in any grant funding.
Haley Lane, Planning Director. So the safety element has a slew of statute requirements of things that need to be discussed and analyzed, right, such as, you know, wildfire, public services, things like that. So the county, we have a current adopted local hazard mitigation plan, and a lot of what is required in that plan by statute is also required of a safety element. So what we're going to be doing, I'm working with Brian Cinone from OES. He's currently updating the local hazard mitigation plan, and I'll be working with him in tandem for us to adopt that as the safety element. So those issues you are discussing will be within that document.
Perfect. No, thank you, Haley.
Yeah.
That's right. And then one thing that I've thought about quite a bit, too, and the Planning Commission brought this up as well, some areas get subdivided, so people buy lots, you know, they're from San Francisco or wherever they buy a lot. Well, I'm going to build my dream home, and they come up for the dream home, and what do you mean it doesn't pass a perfect test? What do you mean it doesn't accept a sewer? Where's my water going to come from? Tell a comical story. There's a supervisor in Butte County. He got a phone call from a woman saying that her water was out. So he spoke with her. He said, "What's that? You have a small building on your place." She said, "Yeah, I have a small building where I store some things. That's your well. We don't provide the water for you." In regards to this, is there any for the planning that areas can be subdivided and has to at least meet basic human needs before it can happen or develop that into the general plan?
The general plan can have guiding policies which will lean into that, but a lot of that comes down to implementation. So a lot of that will be found in the municipal code and how the subdivision of land and the certain services and utilities that are required to actually develop that land have to be in place before you can inhabit it.
And to echo Supervisor Ogren, I do appreciate the work the Planning Commission does. They don't get paid really anything, and then when they have to deal with the difficult decisions all the time. So thank you. I'm done there, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Cuffson. So who is the community?
My definition of community here?
Mm-hmm.
Community would be residents within the county.
Thank you. So how do you limit that input that we'll be receiving to the residents of the county?
Well, that's a difficult task. Depends how you're collecting information. Depends the type of engagement that you do. If you have online engagement, online engagement, there's the option of having follow-up questions that start to get down to where individuals live or reside. Otherwise, you're just going on good faith that someone is honest on where they live. To get down to tracking individuals is typically not part of a project like this.
And the only reason I bring that up is that the influx, I mean, when you move from the outside into Siskiyou County, basically you embrace what we have. Mm-hmm. You don't bring what you left behind here. I mean, some you do, but, you know, a lot of what the urban areas have, if you want that, you have to go there. You're not going to get it in Siskiyou anytime in the near future, I'm sure. And that has to be, I guess, considered, and, you know, because litigants are usually from the outside as well. Internally in the county as well, but they do come from the outside about what, you know, Siskiyou County should look like. The workshops, where are the locations, the two that you're going to have?
Those locations are to be determined.
By who?
First, it starts with county staff. There's different ways that you can select locations. Sometimes it's based on geographic setting. Sometimes it's based on supervisorial districts. Just depends. We don't have that set in stone yet because it's all up for discussion.
Is two the max? Because at least from my perspective, I would go four, north, south, east, and west. That would get you a better input than just two.
So I explain that a bit further. So it's not just two workshops. They're workshop series.
Okay.
So think of a single week where five or six nights out of the week they're back-to-back-to-back-to-back workshops happening in tandem throughout the county, and those are done twice.
Okay.
So there are multiple locations.
Okay, that helps. That helps. So when you get input from the community that's impractical, what are you going to do with it?
Well, I think that's subjective. I can't say what's impractical or not.
Well, on our local transportation commission meeting, we always have every year, what, you know, how do we meet the needs?
Right.
And we want to go to the, you know, we want to have a Saturday run. And so we put the Saturday run into place and it falls flat on its face. So, I mean, there's just stuff that we're not going to be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you address that in what the input that you will get? Do
well,
you discard it or do you
no.
just say, gee, nice idea, but yeah, we can't do it?
So no comments are discarded. I would say the only time when a comment is flagged is vulgarity or language mm-hmm. as such. But no comments are discarded. They're all pulled together. They're all part of summaries that are typically the way that we like to do summaries is verbatim. What members say is charted and put out, regardless if it's impractical or not. But what we do is we bring forth those summaries to the Planning Commission, we bring them forth to the board, and it's up to the board and Planning Commission to decide what is the practicality of that. It's not us to decide what it is.
Current zoning, if we're doing an update in zoning, how does that affect what we have currently?
So that's dependent on where the land use element goes. So right now you have a set of zoning districts or zones, which as part of those have a set of allowable uses, have a set of development standards. Not knowing where your land use element is going to end up, meaning not knowing if land uses are going to change, if they're going to be modified or no change at all, I'm not sure where the zoning is going to go. If a land use designation is changed, let's say the use or the intent changes, then we'll need to update the corresponding zone to reflect it for consistency. Or there might need to be a new zone created, but I'm not sure at this point.
So can you take an ag zone now, currently, that may look like it should be commercial future? Is that what we will look at in this process or not?
Are you talking about if there was an existing property that zoned agriculture, but the interest was to have it go commercial?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of what ifs as part of that. I mean, if that ag parcel is part of Williamson Act, it's pretty much locked in unless it gets out of a contract.
Understood.
If the intent is by Planning Commission's recommendation and the board to eventually change a parcel or recommend a parcel to have a new designation, then that would be part of this effort. Then that parcel could be redesignated, then would have to have a rezone because your zone needs to be consistent with the designation, and then would be evaluated through the environmental impact report what that change would mean.
So soils dictate some of that zoning too, correct?
Soils can, yes.
So in the case that Commissioner Hart brought up with regard to a change in use of ag land because it's deprived of water or dewatered,
mm-hmm.
that zoning may have to change,
mm-hmm.
Are we going to have that flexibility in this plan?
So I would say just because property goes fallow doesn't mean that
I'm
the
not
zone
talking
has
fallow.
To change.
I'm just talking they can't work it anymore, period. The only thing they can do is subdivide.
then it is at the discretion of the planning commission recommendation and board. If you do want to change the land use designation on parcels as part of this process, yes, you can. And that's part of the evaluation of a land use element.
Okay. The newsletter, how will it be disseminated? Is it just going to be a handout? Is it going to be online? How are you going to do it?
So typically the newsletter is both hard copy and digital.
Okay.
So it'll be available PDF format online, and it'll be available at the planning department. Or if there's other locations that the board feels the newsletter should be available, we can add to that as well.
Haley Lane, Planning Director. I just wanted to add really quickly, I've been working with our PIO, Ali Kutzer, on our deliverables, upcoming deliverables and things like that. I met with her a few weeks ago, so I'm working with her right now on this first newsletter, pushing it out, you know, email blasts, our Facebook page, you know, posting it physically at county offices and things like that.
Okay, thank you. The logo, I guess I'm just kind of curious. Does it matter whether you like our logo for the county or not? But if you're trying to be consistent with Siskiyou County, why aren't you using the county logo?
So typically what we try to do is have a logo that is tied to the actual general plan effort so that the product is recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not uncommon to use a county logo that's existing. Typically through efforts that are done with general plans, you do have a separate branding scheme, and that was selected as part of the process. And the logo was done in consultation with county staff. But if it wasn't the desire of the board to go back and use the existing
I'm just asking, because I mean, we look for consistency, and
sure.
I think even internally within our departments, the logo changes a little bit. So I don't even think we have that consistency. So it's just food for thought. And I guess lastly, I'm going to give you two examples. One, composting toilets by ordinance were outlawed in this county until we had an individual say why. And come to find out, composting toilets were far more environmentally safe, I guess you'd call it, than septic systems. And so by ordinance, we changed that. How do we look at those kind of examples of issues that are out there that a constituent says, gee, this is really practical and we should embrace that, but yet county ordinance doesn't allow it? Will somewhere in this process those types of subjects come up where you could say, gee whiz, county, you need to change the ordinance to accommodate X?
Sure. The way I like to look at the engagement is think about how we're facilitating the discussion today is an assets, opportunities, challenges discussion. That's from the decision-making side. The first set of workshops is from the community resident side. And as part of all of that feedback, I can almost bet there'll probably be topics or items that come up where individuals feel that there are opportunities that the county is not capitalized on, or there are challenges through ordinances or your current code. That hamper development or hamper certain uses. And what we do is we collect that feedback and bring it back and report back on it to the board. At that point, we can have the discussion if there are areas where we need to, as I mentioned, cut the red tape, ministerial review, start to look through the implementation of how to change that. Composting toilets is an example of that. That was done through an ordinance change. That can be part of this effort, especially since the code, that's the teeth of the code's implementation arm. That's the teeth of everything. And so as part of that, if we're doing a comprehensive code update, that's the opportunity to make those ordinance changes at one fell swoop at that point.
And then the last example with regard to AB 1383, the organics bill.
Mm-hmm.
Rural counties is just impractical. But yet, is legislation of that type going to be part of the element that we're going to be dealing with?
If part of the legislation has a requirement that jurisdictions must meet a base minimum, then we'll have to find an approach that meets the base minimum for that. Going beyond that, no. But again, there's different methods of meeting those requirements, and that's what we'll bring to the board and the planning commission and let you decide on the path you want to take on that.
So lastly, I'll just say that my goal with this process would be to streamline what we have currently. that when someone wants to build a house or put up a deck or if anything that can, you know, maintain, I guess, what would could be considered a right to the property and liberty to use that property. And I know there's constraints, I get that. But our process currently is so cumbersome that we drive people away more so than being able to develop in Siskiyou County. And I want our process to be as clean as it can, not only for the constituent, but for our staff, that try to do and get the job done currently. But elsewhere, you know, whether it's another state or another county, maybe it's because the general plans are updated, or maybe it's just that, you know, in some states it's just free. It shouldn't take, you know, a long period of time to build a house. Some of the constraints, and I brought it up earlier, are contractors. They're fighting not only the material cost in the last few years with bidding and trying to get a house up and running and get through our process that's holding up that deliverable to the cost of that contractor, but then to the other side, to the constituent, who in the last couple of years, because of interest rates, have now, you know, had to succumb to interest rate increases, not because they aren't warranted, but because our process is long enough that individuals get hit with that, and instead of paying 3% on a loan, they might be paying now 6%, or I guess it's even up to 7% now. So this process has to address those constraints within the department itself, us, and the constituent, so that we're cost effective in how we roll out permitting as well.
That is your question?
That's it.
Okay, you heard a pretty good cross-section of what you're going to be up against in this community. One of the things I think you're quite well aware of, Siskiyou is a huge county, so I'm glad to hear that when you do your outreach, you're going to do two, but it's going to be all over the whole facets, be north, south, east, west. You know, for me, I think streamlining the process to help facilitate the constituents. My biggest concern is going to be the outreach to the people, to the constituents. What you're not seeing is the people that are online, that, you know, we only have a listen-only feature on this, is that, you know, we have to go above and beyond. There's no media here. There's no television, there's no radio, and there's no newspaper. So we have to think outside the box. We have to coordinate with our website to make sure that link's there. I tried to find the Siskiyou 2050. It didn't come up. So, you know, we got to make sure that that's easy.
Is that on our website?
No. It's
a standalone website, but they're going to be linked.
I'm just doing the cursory thing, and so, you know, I'm glad to see that there's a timeline that we get beat up all the time, not soon enough, not fast enough, too long, and all that kind of thing. You know, Commissioner Mello, I was a city council member, came on right after you. General plan was completed. They're now in the process of the 2045 update type thing. You know, for me, it's, you know, I'm an operations type guy. I want to see this and I'm counting on you guys to step up to the plate here, because we have such a diverse community, completely different than Trinity County or whatever. And it's going to help us get, quote unquote, apply for the grants, whatever. Housing is my big focus. We have no housing. You know, we're always, you know, you hear every constituent here talk about how we're up against the state. They keep changing the plan type thing. So, you know, moving forward, you know, again, my biggest focus, making sure we get to all our constituents. Yes, we represent constituents, but, you know, there's people that want to be involved, but we want to make sure. So, Wendy, you want to take a break, then we'll come back and finish this up, because I want to do one more round for the back of the apple.
Sounds good.
5 minutes, please.
Thank you.